welcome to the Jeff Blumenkrantz Songbook Podcast, Month Upon a Time, Episode 5. Before I even go there, I just want to say there is some adult content. If you are a minor, ask your parents if you can listen to this episode. Otherwise, as long as you have no objections, keep listening. So I pride myself on not having repeat guests on this podcast. I like to mix it up. But every once in a while, there's a specific song written for someone, and I have to bring someone back. And that is definitely the case here. And I am really happy to welcome back to my podcast the fabulous Julia Murney.
Hello.
Oh, she's got her sexy voice on
today. I'm very happy to be dragged back in.
Yes, there was a lasso involved.
Like Godfather 3. They pull me back in.
So, as you will soon understand, this song could only be sung by Julia Murney. And that doesn't mean that other people shouldn't sing it. However, for the purposes of this podcast, it was a mandatory attendance.
Indeed.
So thank you so much for being here again.
It's totally my pleasure.
I think by way of like starting our conversation, I'm going to explain what our song is.
Okay.
So as you who are probably listening to this podcast know, this is part of a year-long song cycle called Month Upon a Time, and each song relates to a month of the year. And I put it out to my Twitter followers and also Facebook people. What should October's song be about? Well, one of the people responded, and I'll name her because she gets, you know, her credit.
Yeah, give her her props.
It goes on the sheet music, and it gets announced on the podcast.
Very cool.
Eloise Akehurst of the United Kingdom suggested I write a song about Julia Murney's Cocktober.
Well, Eloise.
You didn't even know people were interested in your Cocktober.
I didn't know.
So I saw that and I was like,
What?
Okay, whatever. Well, it just so happens that at the same time I was looking for songs for October, I was working with a certain Mr. Jason Robert Brown. And I was like, Jason, what should I write an October song about? And he literally says, Julia Murney's Cocktober. And so then it was like a gauntlet was laid down. And I thought, okay, now I have to find out what this is and write a song about it. So obviously I called you. Mm-hmm. And well, I got, you know, a firsthand accounting of it, but you can all go to YouTube and see Julia in a sort of, well, that wasn't a stand-up night. Did you sing a song that night?
It was Don't Quit Your Night Job.
Okay.
I mean, I've told the story in my solo shows, my solo concerts, but that, the one that's on YouTube is from Don't Quit Your Night Job. They do a fabulous improv evening.
Yeah.
Steve Rosen and Sarah, they all do.
Yeah.
And they always do they have someone, a Broadway person, tell a backstage story, like, you know, something funny that happened or whatever. And they said, will you do the backstage story this week? I said, okay, I'm not sure what to. And one of them, I don't remember, they were like, just tell the porn story. It's like, oh, okay. And by the time I got home, it was on YouTube.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Now, meanwhile, there's a reference to it on your CD liner notes?
Yes. Because the first time I told the story, I was my very first solo concert. And I was singing this song called Fancy, which is a Bobby Gentry song that Reba McEntire recorded. And it's about a prostitute. And I'm trying to figure out how on earth to get into the song. And Stephen Aremus, who was music directing the evening, goes, well, you could tell your porn story. And I was like, I guess I could. So I told it. And then for a number of solo concerts afterwards, I wasn't able to get away without telling it.
Right.
Because someone in the audience was like, tell your porn story. So when I made my album,
which is wonderful, and it's called I'm Not Waiting.
Thank you very much.
And you
much.
Can find it all wherever great albums are sold.
Such as the iTunes. I recorded Fancy on the album, and in the liner notes, I said, if you want to hear the porn story, you have to see me live or in person or something like that. And then that ended up resulting in perhaps some children who should not be asking me this question at, I don't know, the stage door of Wicked, going, will you tell me the porn story? Like, no. But it's tricky.
Well, see, now you don't have to field those questions anymore because they can just come to the Jeff Blumenkrantz podcast and get it all explained.
Yes.
So, I don't know, do you think you should, you know, tell the story, or do we let the song speak for itself, or I don't know, how do we do this?
I mean, I guess without telling the whole tale, it basically comes out of, this is all true, that I do voiceovers as a...
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that,
in addition to, you know, acting and things. And I was offered, I didn't have to audition, how lovely, this job wherein I did basically voiceovers for hardcore porn for a channel that doesn't exist anymore. And... I had just bought my apartment, and I had a chair. I had no television. I had nothing. And so I was like, screw it, sure, yeah, I'll do it. And I did it for a number of weeks, and there was one particular, I can't remember any of it, but like there was one particular promo that stuck out in my head, because I, as soon as I left the booth, I called my friend Marsh. I was like, oh my, here's a good one. And it is quite literally how I bought my television. And and then they ended up moving their whole production offices, if you want to call them that, to New Jersey. And the company wanted to then send a car once a week to bring me to New Jersey so I would keep doing the voiceovers. And I was like, I think I'm set. I think I'm good. I've done enough of that now.
It was okay to part ways then.
It was quite amusing, and definitely has resulted in a very good story, all of which is 100% true.
Well, I just want to say for the record, I mean, the song just, you know, picks up where your story leaves off. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think you actually own some of the things that we talk about, because, you know, Julia has a dog. She doesn't have a cat. But
but that's really perhaps the only...
Come on!
The only... yeah, it's a great song.
Oh my God, I can't wait to hear you sing it. But before you do, I want to talk to you, because some of the feedback I get about this podcast is, you know, I learn about the business, and, you know, hearing people talk about their careers, and something that hasn't gotten any airtime on the podcast is the world of voiceovers. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into that, and what do you have to say about, you know, your voiceover career?
Well, to be honest, I kind of cheated, if you will, because my dad does them. My dad is a big voiceover guy,
yeah.
And so I sort of jumped on his coattail a tiny bit, and his agents, I mean, it took me a minute to, his agents at the time ended up signing me right out of college, because probably as a favor to my dad, they had sent me out one summer when I was in college, and I booked the first thing I auditioned for. I booked nothing else, but I booked the first thing. So they were like, oh, you're like your dad. And so they signed me. They were incredibly kind and wonderful. And that's how it started. And, it's such great work if you can get it. I mean, I can wear sweatpants and a baseball hat and nobody cares. And I can do whatever feminine hygiene products on tell, which I have done and I can say, what was don't you wish you always felt this comfortable even when you're having your period? And no one, and it's not like I'm the on-camera person where someone on the subway is going to be like, you're that girl who doesn't feel so fresh. Like, they don't know it's me. So that's kind of fantastic. And I, for a while now, have been one of the voices of Estee Lauder, and they've been really wonderful to me.
What a great company.
And it's just, it's great. It's great. And it can be lucrative at times and not at other, it just, you know, depends, but... It's I think for someone who doesn't have a dad who happens to do voiceovers, the best thing you can do is there are lots of classes. I feel like those classes they charge egregious amounts of money for something you could probably figure out on your own. But if you feel like you need the class, by all means, and you've got the cash, go do it. But you can also just pay attention to some ads on television, write down the copy, in this day and age, you can record something on your computer,
right.
And then you've got yourself a demo to send out to agents.
Does the demo actually, it makes a difference in this business?
I know that the agents that I was with for like 20 years, I recently switched for, you know, various reasons, nothing bad, but they're wonderful people, and they listen to every demo that comes across their desk.
Amazing.
I know that they
do. And what do they listen for? I mean, what distinguishes a...
It's hard to tell. I don't really know. Because I think there are some people who have said to me, I've always been told I have a great voice and I should do voiceovers. And that's not always entirely the crux of things.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure what they listen to, whether they listen to either a really specific texture. I don't know if it's for men, some fabulous deep announcy voice, or or if it's in a demo variation. And
yeah, because that, I mean, that's the thing that comes across to me about what you do is like you can turn on a dime. You've got like the low, the high, the character, the, you know, you just seem to be, you seem to have a million voices.
And I enjoy that. That's fun for me. And that's not everybody's wheelhouse. And there are, so I knew a woman once who has a very raspy voice.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievably, she took up smoking to try and keep her voice raspy so she could keep doing voiceovers.
Wow.
And I was like, go to your room. No, absolutely not. But her voice wasn't dexterous.
Mm.
So her sound was her sound, period.
Right.
End of story, which made her a lot of bank.
Yeah.
So, but my bank has come from
the variety.
A variety of sounds. It's sort of like the equivalent back in the day. You kids wouldn't know about this, but perhaps Jeff remembers. Back in the day, headshots used to have these things called composites.
Oh, the worst.
Amazing. And they would be at least two and sometimes four different pictures on one sheet. And often, if it was a heavyset person, they were always dressed as a chef in one of them. Why? Does a heavyset person have to be a chef? Or there would be someone, like the men would be dressed as themselves and as a cop. And as a
bow tie business
exactly.
guy.
Exactly. And the women would be like, I'm a snappy waitress. Or
I'm a mom.
I'm a mom. Yeah. I'm a lawyer.
That exactly. kind of thing. Glasses.
Exactly. And my very first headshots that I ever got taken, I was in high school, and you know, some photographer did a 2-for-1 special for us. And my girlfriend Dawn and I went to as the 2-for-1. I did a composite. It's two pictures side by side. But I didn't understand the concept behind the composite. I look precisely the same in each shot, except in one of them I have on a bow tie, so I look like a cater waiter, which was not what I meant to have happen.
Do you have it? Because if you do, I'll link to it.
I don't. It's not for public consumption.
Oh, darn.
I believe I have one copy of it somewhere, but I don't even know where it is.
If you scan it,
but
I will post it.
Devastating. But I think the voiceover tapes sort of, or demos sort of become like tapes, just age myself again, become like composite headshots were back in the day in terms of showing variety.
Right.
And, that kind of, and don't, and if you are making one, don't make it too long.
What's the going length?
I would say 2 minutes, 3 minutes max.
Yeah.
Because frankly, the ears get bored and they'll shut it off. Like, so just instead of doing like massive 30-second spots, you're just taking clips. You're just taking little sections out of things. And don't forget to listen to the radio, too. Don't take everything off the TV, because the radio tends to have a lot more of the variation in
yeah.
sounds and voices and stuff. And frankly, especially in radio and television, the copy you're given is the copy that's said. But in radio, especially if you're doing like two people talking, all those kinds of ads, is heavily based on improv and little things that you can throw in, not like over the top things, but they will often respond if you're two people and you've got chemistry going and you both know, and obviously you have to say the copy as it said, but at the end there'll some like,
just
oh, that's what
on.
I thought, or yeah. something, some
yeah.
little thing. And
does that come up like in a, if you're making an audition tape, do you throw in a little extra or are you just staying
sticking? You mean if I'm auditioning for an actual product,
yeah.
or if you're making a demo?
No. If you're auditioning for a specific
yeah.
spot, will you improv on in the
yeah.
audition?
Not, but definitely not in TV copy. TV copy is as read, because
yeah.
it's all set to picture.
Right.
It's and not an announced copy for radio. I mean, I do sometimes I do Port Authority. There's no there's in the sort of like if you see something, say something about those things.
Right.
There's not any improv in that. You
right.
just read the copy as it is.
Right.
I'm talking more in when you're, hey Janice, where'd you get that lipstick? Oh, there's a new sale at Gigi. Those things, and adding like, I love that color. Chances are the hmm's not in there, but
right.
you make it sound natural and you
yeah.
make it sound whatever.
Well, what do you think? You think we should plunge?
I think we should plunge.
All right. Well, I am so excited to introduce Julia Murney singing Welcome to my apartment.
Welcome to my apartment. Kick off your shoes, relax. Would you like a drink before we start the tour? I'm dying to show you all the wonderful things my voiceover job enabled me to procure. Perhaps you should accept that drink. For this, you may not want to be sober. 'Cause the promos I voiced were for the porno network Moist. For its glorious month of Cocktober. Let's start in here. We'll keep you hard all day, hard all night. Refinished my hardwood floors. Next up, last orgy in Paris. Paid for these new French doors. If you like your bitches with an Asian twist, bought the Oriental rugs. All tits all the time. Bought this beautiful set of Majolica jugs. Hungry pussy, gave me cat food for a year. They're gonna have to scrape you off the ceiling. Voila, a chandelier. Everywhere I look, I see another thing Moist has brought to me. So I hope you won't feel threatened when I say, in my home, it's Cocktober every day. Wait, there's more. Boss is banging naughty secretaries. Paid for my office chair. Furries like to fucking suck too. Paid for my teddy bear. Our babes are dripping wet. Repaired my kitchen sink. Watch them get screwed and tattooed. Paid to frame my Picasso pen and ink. Nights don't get any hotter than this. Meant an eiderdown duvet. To pee or not to pee, that is the question. Look, a toilet and bidet. I just hope they remember how great I sound when casting for September rolls around. 'Cause I still could use a few more things. And I'd love to know the joy September brings. And you're always welcome to come again. Come as many times as you can. But if you can't come, I promise nothing's wrong. Just remember that in my home it's Cocktober. And hopefully September, but definitely Cocktober. All year long. If I can, I'll work Moist the rest of my life.
Oh, Julia. That is absolutely like my dream rendition. I can't imagine a better performance of this song ever.
I think it might be possible that you're going to get some people who are going to give it a try, though.
Oh my God, come on, how amazing would it be if people actually sang this song?
It could happen. I don't think it should happen in the, you know, whatever, the junior high talent show, but...
Oh my gosh. I am sorry, parents, if your kids have listened to this,
but
it had to be written and it had to be sung.
Oh my word.
Thank you so much.
I love it. It's an awesome song. I love it.
So, Julia.
Yes.
I know what you're doing now, but I want you to tell everybody else what you're doing now, because it's great to have you back on the New York City stage.
Thanks. I'm doing a world premiere of a new Michael John LaChiusa musical.
Love him.
Called Queen of the Mist, and it is with the Transport Group. It stars Mary Testa, and it's very cool in the same way that your sheet music for Welcome to My Apartment says inspired by an idea from Eloise Akehurst. The first page of the score for Queen of the Mist says for Mary.
Oh.
And come on, how beautiful is that? And she's extraordinary. She's outrageous. And it's about, ostensibly it's about the first person to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel and live, the first person to live. And this woman did it. Her name was Anna Edson Taylor. She was 63 years old, and she did it in 1901. Now, other people had tried and died. And subsequently, many people have tried and died. A few people have succeeded, but...
Is it that many people who have died trying?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like hundreds.
Scores?
But not scores, but I would say a good handful.
Wow.
Maybe upwards of 20.
Wow.
Morons. there is one photo, it's terrifying, of this one guy who decided to try and shoot the fall on a jet ski. And there's a photograph.
So this is recent.
Yeah. Dude clearly died, as we say in the show. But there's this picture taken from sort of behind the falls, like where the rapids are, what leading up to the falls, and he shoots the fall, and he and the jet ski have just essentially separated. Like, you know, like the jet ski's going this way and he's up in the air. And really? And it is fascinating to me too, and it's an entirely true story. Michael John wrote book, music, and lyrics, and it's gorgeous. And this woman was sort of not of her time. She was sort of like a bossy pants and a bit of a grifter, and was just always running around trying to figure out how to make money and how to live the life she wanted to live. And back then, daredevil was somewhat of a viable, if you could survive things, because people would walk across the falls on tight ropes.
For money.
Uh-huh. And all that kind of stuff. And she decided to do it, and she actually succeeded.
Was this in a barrel?
It was in a barrel. She had her own barrel. She designed it, and she just filled it with padding, and she had like a harness and some handles, and there was an anvil on the bottom of the barrel to keep it weighted so it didn't, and she picked the white Kentucky oak and all of this stuff. And some people, and she did some test runs with it. She had a little cat called Iagra, and she put the cat into the barrel to make sure it didn't leak. And when they would just put the barrel in the rapids to see how it worked. And if the cat came back, I mean, the cat lived, if the cat came back wet, they're like, oh, okay, we got to fix the sealant or whatever. And there was one woman named Maud Willard who went into the rapids and with her dog. Oopsie Daisy was the name of the dog. And the dog plugged her air hole. The dog lived, and Maud Willard, peace out, she died.
Wait, I don't understand. The dog, what do you mean, like the dog got sucked up against the air
hole? No, I think, I don't know, in my notion of it, is that the dog was like, ooh, that's where the air is.
Stick your nose in there.
You can suck it, lady, I'm doing this.
And she died.
She died.
Like, does it take that long to like...
I think it depends, I'm not sure. And there was one guy who... created this sort of vessel, and he was, I don't know how he did this, but he had allotted himself with like, I don't know, 3 hours of oxygen somehow, but he got stuck on the boulders of the fall for 16 hours. So he suffocated. I mean, and then some of them, their barrels or their vessels get smashed. There's one guy, they only ever found his arm.
Lord.
It was crazy. And she did this. And she then assumed that she would become rich and famous, and she didn't. And I don't know if it was partially because she, as a personality, was not attractive in terms of like, the way she acted and the way she was an older woman, and they'd bring out the barrel, and then they'd bring her out, and people would be like,
boo.
No, boo town, you didn't shoot the fall, but she did. And there was a man who did it. She did it in 1901, and there was a man called Bobby Leach who did it in 1911. He became really rich and famous.
It's so funny because it really does have a like a current resonance.
It kind of does. And I mean, Bobby Leach, the kicker of that is that Bobby Leach, a few years later, ended up dying in New Zealand from injuries after he slipped on an orange peel. Mm. So you're like, really? You made it interesting. But what's astounding about this show is that, so you sort of say, oh, it's about the first woman who went over Niagara Falls and lived. That's what it's about. And then about the last third of the show kind of walks up and taps you on the shoulder and goes, I'm actually going to be about this. And you're like, oh, why am I crying? And and I don't want to give any more away.
You've already said too much.
But it's just, if we've gone too far, you should go. But yeah, it's with the Transport Group. It's at a place called the Gym at the Judson. transportgroup.org, I believe, is their website.
Yes, I will definitely link
and,
to it.
And please come see it. It's really beautifully staged. It's in the theater where Lysistrata Jones was. I don't know if any of you listening saw that, but that's going to Broadway, I think soon, very soon.
Yeah, this
I believe.
Season, right?
Yeah. I mean, but I think imminently this season. Mm. It's a very flexible playing space. So in this one, the audience is on both sides, and we go in the middle of them. And it's very beautiful. And the cast is wonderful. And Mary Testa, you should see Mary Testa rock out something that was written for her. Because those of you who are listening, if you've ever had the occasion to see someone who is performing in something that was written on them or for them, if you will, it's very magical. And Mary gives a very magical performance.
Well, that was a really good commercial for the city. She just can't help herself. She's always like selling.
You know, the queen of the mist.
Oh, even a little musical tune.
There it is.
Julia, I can't thank you enough for being here.
I'm so happy.
And
to be
going here. Going to the dirty place for me.
I like going to the dirty place for you, Jeff.
And thank you all for listening. And this is Jeff and Julia saying, so.